Grow My Cleaning Company teaches owners of cleaning companies just like you how to grow your company, make more money, and finally take charge of your financial future and your life. This podcast is about automating and creating systems that give you time and money freedom so you can grow like crazy without losing control. Since this is totally free, if you're getting tons of value, want to support us and make sure that you get more of the good stuff, subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast today. Now, on to the show. Hey, Cleaning Nation, Mike Campion here with, depending on where you're from, Jack Ricard, he'll say it right, and it sounds all English and fancy, but Jack R. from North Carolina by way of the UK. He owns Quartz Cleaning, and he bought it April 2019. We're recording April 2021, so it'll be a nice little what's gone on for the last couple of years. Quartz is a residential cleaning company, like I said, in Wake County, North Carolina. Jack is in our elite program, which is kind of my favorite folks to have, because you guys sometimes will have the Next Level Millionaire Mastermind. They're kind of the after. And a lot of times we have just regular Cleaning Nation just has questions or the before. Jack's one of the rare during, right? He's in process. So I'm interested to hear his story. He's trying to start telling me the story before. I'm like, no, be quiet. This is interesting. We have to invite Cleaning Nation. So I'm interested to hear his personal story, how he bought the company. And I think he's got a question that I'm going to answer that I'll just help Jack, but everybody. So Jack, first of all, tell me how to say your name right. Second of all, just give us a quick background of kind of coming to the States and what that looked like and how you wandered in the cleaning business. Thanks, Mike. Hold on. You are now, we were talking before, I could hear you, and now I can't hear a blessed thing, my friend.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Go right ahead, my friend. So right pronunciation of your name and just the story of how you got here and into the business.
Yeah, so it's Jack Ricard. So, but you need to be English to say it like that. Because I've noticed in America, you know, anyone who's got my surname always has the same different pronunciation. So you're fine. Don't worry about it. It's far better than some of the other the other names I get called. All right. So and I'll leave that to your imagination. Right. Yeah, we're in North Carolina. My wife and my daughter came. We came 2 years ago. I spent all my life in the military. And we wanted an outdoor lifestyle. So it's much warmer here, far warmer here than it is in the UK. We chose North Carolina as a shortlist, you know, from a number of states we could have gone to. But look, it's lovely here, but we had to buy a business in order to get the visa. So we got a 5-year visa on the basis that we would buy a business and grow it, which all seems, you know, pretty straightforward. And we bought that 2 years ago. But other than that, Mike, I've never been in cleaning. I've pretty much never had an interest in the industry at all. I'm a quite complete sort of neophyte to it. We spent the first year trying to work pretty hard to systemize the business. That's kind of where I focused, but I was not really getting a huge amount of traction because I spent far too long kind of in the day-to-day, let's call them politics of the business, you know, sort of dealing with the girls falling out with each other and, you know, call outs and all that kind of business, you know, all the sort of energy sapping stuff that happens in the business. And then, of course, COVID hit.
How much energy sapping units we've got? What's your headcount on how many cleaners you have, just so we get an idea?
Well, when I started, we had 16. I grew it to 21. But now we're back down to 9.
Okay, so 10 right?
So,
to 20,
yeah, depending so, on the- So COVID happened, and I mean, North Carolina closed down for about 3 weeks, pretty much. We're residential, so we had a very old client, and we had some very old clients who completely sort of, you know, freaked out when it came to the COVID thing. And so all of a sudden, a lot of my client base was gone. And they've started, you know, some of them have come back on, but we're running at about 40% of previous business. But the kicker is, although we're down massively on revenue, I make more profit now.
That's a writer downer, guys. The revenue.
I make so much more profit now. And over the last few weeks as well, you know, because of being in this program, you just recast my sort of perspective on, you know, on how to view the business. So I'm now able to step back more, much more confident about stepping back and letting the, you know, letting the business get on, because we kind of got, you know, sort of core values in place, and we'll come on to that, I'm sure. But, you know, essentially that's it in a nutshell. We love it here in the States. It's great, get a bit of sunshine and stuff like that. But the reason I came to the
real party, quick, two quick just pieces of coaching for the team. I think Jack knows this, but I want to make sure listeners get it, and then we'll move right on, Jack. Two things Jack said that are super important. One, the only thing better than owning a business that makes money is owning a business that makes the same amount of money for half the work, right? So we get all the vanity numbers at the top line. I have $1 million company, $10 million, $1 billion company, right? The only number that pays bills or moves the meter, does anything good in this life, is the bottom one of how much do we keep that we can invest in whatever we want to invest in, right? So we think the more we make top line, the better. Couldn't be further from the truth. I would rather make less top line and keep my profit the same. The only thing better than that is making less top line, because top line really equivalent to work, right? We think it's vanity and feel good and look good and all that. It really just means work, more employees, more overhead, more moving parts, which is fine if you get paid for it. When you make less money, pass. So if you can make the same money, if you're gonna make $100,000 a year, no matter what, trust me, you'd rather have a $100,000 company than a $10 million company if you're only gonna make $100,000. The only thing better than that is like, oh, I lowered my top line and simultaneously raise my, make more money doing less work. That's the keys to the whole daggum kingdom there. And just Jack said it as a throwaway, but I want you guys, so I guess I said I have two things. I have three. He says a throwaway, but I want you to miss it. The big thing for him that helped, what I hear, correct me if I'm wrong, Jack, do less work for the same or more money, was getting core values and culture and realizing if I just try and solve every problem individually, I'll be doing it till the end of time and I'll never solve them all. But if I just have if I create a culture of success and a culture that people want to be of effectiveness, that kind of handles a lot of the problems that I can step out. The third thing I just want to mention with the whole COVID thing, guys, gals, and I don't want to get into the whole COVID thing, but a lot of, it's so funny having coached through that, it's half and half. Half the people just went down. Half the people are like, best time of my life. The people that are successful, and this isn't a COVID thing because we're kind of hopefully at the tail end of it here. This is just a business thing. The people that are successful said, all I have to do is change my messaging. So older people who are terrified, and again, I know this is super politicized, but I would agree. Like, I kind of bust chops for younger fit people that are all terrified. And if you want to be young and fit and terrified, it's okay. We can still be friends. But older people are very overweight people or people that have underlying conditions. I get it. It's a really scary thing. That said, the messaging just has to change. So what happened with older people is they thought putting people into my home is a danger. I would have worked as hard as I could to change my messaging. And again, you have to make sure this is the truth. You can't just lie to people. Change my messaging to, are people being in your home is the safest thing you can do, right? We offer sanitization and disinfectant services. So if you are going to stay in a very small enclosed place, and you know, history has kind of proven this out now, a lot of people got sick staying home. Like, right? That was not always the most ideal thing. So I would have changed messaging to be like, I'd have to make sure I had protocol that I wasn't bringing, you know, God forbid I say, it's the healthiest thing to do to bring our people in. And then they got sick. I got to make sure if I had to buy a full bag of hazmat suit, so be it. I would have done that. So just so you guys know, COVID wasn't the problem. It was your client's beliefs around COVID that was the problem. And if you were able to, I don't say manipulate, but effectively level up their beliefs, you could have continued serving them for way more money, made way more profit. So don't want to get into all that. The takeaway going forward is it's almost never what's happening in the world, which is good because we have no control over that. It's always our response to that, which is everyone's like, oh my gosh, COVID, did that kill your business? I'm like, oh, we grow like wildfire because our response is we want to help you during COVID as opposed to everyone curl up and die. All right, rant over. Jack, you didn't call for any of those things. How can I serve you right now, my friend?
No, look, you hit the nail on the head where you point out it's the core value thing. You know, and here's a funny thing. It's a bit of a paradox, Mike. All right, but I always thought I was on top of all the core values because I spent all my time in the military. You know, and you don't do anything without knowing what the core values are. But you also know that the guy who's got your back or the guy who's in your team understands the core values of the organization so well. Goodness me, you just take them for granted. Yeah. You don't need to keep talking about how important the mission is and how important the vision and purpose of doing this particular thing, as challenging as it is. You don't need to keep doing it. So you take it for granted. You come out into, let's say you come out into the business world, you've got to be real crystal clear on those core values.
Only if you want to be successful.
and you cannot assume that other people in your business or your clients, as smart as they are, all right, understand your core values as well as you do, unless you are talking about them all the time. And it was that realization when I stopped, really early on in the modules, really early on, getting that realization and just waking up to it was a game changer.
So for everyone listening.
And I don't say it lightly. I mean, like, you know, because these are things that are so important. I thought I was on top of them, and actually I wasn't. I was a million miles away from it, because you could have asked anyone in my team, what are the core values of this business? Well, I think Jack thinks this, but yeah. I'm not too sure.
Yeah,
that's it. That's what I mean. And if they don't know, they ain't living.
It's a great litmus test. If I'd like to believe, and I think I'm going to test it next, because I see my former employee. I've had so many former employees. I run into them periodically. I'd like to believe you could wake up an employee from 8 years ago that I haven't talked to in 5 years in the middle of the night and go, what are the core, what are Mike's core, but have fun, make money, be real, help out. Like, just like have it. So if your current employees, like Jack said it perfectly, I think Jack would want, and then you get seven different answers from four different questions, we got a problem. So it's a great litmus test. If you feel I'm on top of the core values, the way to know is, can you leave the business and trust your people to do a good job? And if you ask them, can they say, have fun, make money, be real, help out, but with yours and like that, without, let me look, let me check, I think, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And we'll all 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 people go, have fun, make money, be real, help out. Great starting point. Okay. So by the way, the course we have ain't cheap. If Jack's invested his time and money, he's like, hey, here's the big takeaway I got for free. I write that crap down. Just saying. That's what I would do, but you do you. And when I first started, by the way, I don't think I share this story a lot. When I first started coaching, everyone thinks, we made money and we did. It was all great. But my secret sauce, the one thing that I feel like is different, is the culture. People would come to the business that I had and go, how do you do that? I want to be a part of that. How do you hire the best people? And they thought I was hiring really good people. I was, but we really were super clear on our core values. The people that wanted to see shared those core values, because the people that were part of the team shared those core values. So we were all just like the military, such a perfect example. We're all rowing the same way. And let me give you a spoiler alert. My last two companies I sold for seven figures each, the guy that bought them, core values match. He wanted to buy the culture. He's like, I don't know how to create that. And they paid seven figures effectively to have that culture. So, all right, I can't imagine how far we've covered how to say your last name properly, the military core value, COVID. And I don't think that has anything to do with your question. So what question did you have today in the time we got? How can I serve you, buddy?
Critical risks, right? So from the perspective of, I want to be a standoff manager. So hands-off manager, I should say, completely absent. So I can go and flog this business in due course. And, I'll have a higher price because I'm a hands-off. But what are the three critical risks that you perceive for a fully absent owner?
So I'm going to do my best to answer that, but I want to give two caveats. One, I have never had a business that I could be fully hands off for more than a couple months, or that I've chosen to be. The most hands off I've been, I had it in my construction company, which is a little more complex than cleaning, just with the projects we did and the moving parts. It didn't lend itself to hands off. We took about a year off. Even then, I still did daily huddle, which was like 10, 15 minutes, and it decreased in sales. And after the year, I kind of had to come back and freshen everything up. Right. That said, most of the businesses I've run since and before, since I was younger and dumber then, I can run in zero, because I can take weeks off, no problem. I should say two or three. 0 hours is tough in any given week, but I could do it from anywhere in the world. So two to like 15 hours. So I don't have coaching of, here's how to be completely hands-off and be profitable and grow. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm not the guy to help you.
That's great. Okay, I got that caveat. Yeah, I'm happy with that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I didn't want anyone out there hearing, hey, Mike told me he's done this. I have not done that. So the flip side is, not only can I do it in 5 to 15 hours a week, I freaking love the 5 to 15 hours. They're not miserable. I love the people. Yeah. I love stuff I do, I choose to do. So I can't help you with that. Second, I'm going to answer your question because I want to play fair pool, but I'm going to encourage you. And the good thing is we can talk Tuesday anyway. So I would encourage you to ask a different question. What are the three biggest opportunities I should look for when going hands off? Anytime we look for negative, we tend to find it. Not to say we shouldn't protect ourselves from, like you said, critical, like this thing can take down my business. We want to be aware of those, but I still want to focus on the opportunity. So I'm going to answer the question that you asked, but since we're working together, I would ask the same question, but on the positive side next time we talk, because that will make you a lot more money. Okay. So two caveats being, I typically don't like to focus on what could go wrong. I like to focus on what's going right. And I'm coaching not how to be completely hands-off, but to be able to work 0 to 15 hours a week. And you get to pick which hours those are, where in the world you are. You can do them completely virtually. Just want to make sure we're Fair
yeah,
enough.
Spot on. Yeah, great.
All right. So you think I would have looked at this question before because Lindsay gave it to me, but I haven't. So I'm thinking of it as we know. The risks I would worry about would be money, culture, and insurance. So let's talk about insurance because that's the least risky, but it can take you down. So, and if you got the money and the culture right, you probably won't have any insurance problems. As long, I would just want to make sure I've got good insurance. If I'm gone and somebody breaks something, sells something, sues me, says I fired somebody because they were pregnant, blah, 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 blah. Asset protection, right? Obviously I can't give legal or accounting advice because I'm neither a lawyer nor an accountant. But you know, all my stuff's in LLCs, right? So if I, you know, say something offensive to Jack and he sues me, all that he could get is in that LLC, not my entire net worth. So we certainly want to have some sort of asset protection in place. Also, we've got insurance of, you know, obviously you can't, you know, if I commit a crime and rob Jack somehow, there's no insurance that's going to cover me from that. But there's insurances that can cover E&O insurance, errors and omissions, officer's insurance. So if I'm like, hey, Jack, let's go on a date. He's like, I was sexually harassed, you know, and he sues me. We've got insurance to cover that. So I'm not saying you have to be insurance heavy. I'm not saying I spend a lot of time on this, but 5 hours a year just to make sure my workers' comp, my liability, all my insurances. And again, talk to an insurance professional. I'm not that, certainly not in the state of North Carolina. So insurance would be the first easiest, you know, kind of one of those, if you have a problem that requires money, you got money, you got no problem, right? Pay someone a couple $1,000 a year, depending on how big your organization is, to just make sure you've got that box checked. So that's the easiest, probably least important one. Second would be money. The beautiful thing, and this is what we teach in the course, Jack, all the stuff that we have you track, which because here's what I've done. I've tracked, I need to track clicks and this, and there's 1,000 things I tracked. That was too many. So I get overwhelmed and I track nothing, and that's too little. And my business runs rampant, right? So you want to find the kind of 3 to 10 key metrics that you track. And the cool thing is really just starts with profit. So if your profit's good and going up, that can kind of be the end of the conversation. It's usually a little more complex than that, but we only have 20 minutes. We only have a little bit of time. So I try to simplify.
Do you recommend a long-term profit? So a monthly profit, weekly profit, or a daily profit, or a per job profit? What would you recommend?
And it's tough because there's some stuff we know in the program, but I don't want to lose people not in the program.
Yeah.
The customer profitability spreadsheet, which is per customer profit. At the beginning, I might do that every 2 or 3 months. And then when that gets boring, because every time I do it, everything's online, two or three times a year is probably all you need. So that would be per customer profit, which would be completely separate from my profit and loss statement, I would review monthly. So that's a big deal. And again, that might look, depending on the month, like a 6-minute review, right? Everything's good. My sales are up or steady. That's one of the nice things about the cleaning industry, right? We have MRR, monthly recurring revenue. It's a software term, but we have the same thing, and it's just as valuable in cleaning as it is in software. So typically your revenue is not going to do nutty stuff like with a car dealership or a coaching company or construction company. You have revenue go nutty. With cleaning, it usually is pretty steady. So is my revenue good? Is my cost of goods sold good? 50% or less? Is my overhead good? 30% or less? If so, your profit should be 20%. If that's all in line, that could be a 2-minute conversation. I'm done. However, if sales are bad, then I've got sub things that are being tracked, and you've got all this in the course, leads, bid, sales, right? And then applicants interview starts. So there's kind of like 2 levels of tracking. The top level, if that's all green, we don't go down to the second level. But if there's a yellow or red, then what, you can check the second level to find out where that's at. So you're going to, and again, we can talk more in depth on this offline where we have more time as a client. I just can't do too much here. But the short answer to Cleaning Nation is a financial check once a month. And you start with the highest level. And if sales are good, cost of goods sold good, profit good, you don't really need much detail after that. When there's a problem, there's some sub stuff that it's beyond the scope of this podcast to cover. So first is going to be insurance. Second is going to be financial. And here's the money that makes it all go together. Cultural. So I say ridiculous things on the podcast. Once you're a client, you'll hear me say even more, you know, hateful things toward Canadians. You know, I'm always picking on our employees, male and female. If I had a contentious, litigious employee, I'm sure somebody could sue me somehow. You know, obviously I always say it in love and I'm never trying to hurt anyone's feelings, but if you just took a transcript of what I said, I'm sure somebody could go, that was sexist. That was, God forbid, racist. Certainly, I don't know what it'd say to be against Canadians, Canadianists, whatever that's called. And obviously everyone listening knows I'm busting chops, but if someone was super litigious, I'm sure they could, I'm on record saying terrible things, right? And you could go, listen, this, maybe he meant it as a joke, but I felt threatened, blah, blah, all that crap. So certainly, and again, I'm not a lawyer giving legal advice. So certainly there's contracts and this, and you have to sign that. We do very little of that. All of our employees or contractors, depending on the relationship, have an employer contractor agreement they sign. I don't even know what it says. My lawyer wrote it. I'm sure it's fine. I never look at it. Never have had a problem with that ever because our core values are so strong. For those of you that know Tracy or Lindsay or Suzanne or just anyone on our team, they're amazing human beings. They're just not that. Even if I was a sexist jerk and did something that really was wrong, they're not the type that are like, I'm going to, they'd be like, oh, this guy's a jerk. Yeah. I've got skills. I don't need to put up with this nonsense. I'm going to go somewhere. You know what I'm saying? They're just not that, that person. So the culture is what really is the glue that melds all this stuff together. So in, I've never had to use my insurance, even though I might have said something that could be construed depending on who you are, blah, 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 because I only hang out with people that I really are on the same wavelength. So the culture really is the glue that matches it all together. When something's awry in the P&L, young Mike would be like, I'm putting on my Superman cape. I'm going to come save the day and fix this. Old Mike's like, I've hired smart people. I'm going to ask them, what do you, Jack, you're part of the team. You're smarter than I am. What the heck, what's going on, dude? And I'm going to listen to them. Go ahead.
So what, you're sat on your beach, all right, doing your 5 hours a week to to monitor performance, insurance, and your culture. But what performance indicator tells you that the culture is going wrong before it all goes too pear shaped?
Great question.
What's the indicator?
Thank you. There's a big hole I left in my answer. Thank you for pulling it out, Jack. So I briefly mentioned even when I took my year off, I did my daily huddles. So the daily huddles for me, and I got this from Vern Harnish in a book called Rockefeller Habits. Great book. It's probably 15, 20 years old now. He's done a new one. I haven't read yet, but I'm sure it's good. But Rockefeller Habits is where I got this. And there's other, Patrick Lencioni has Death by Meeting. So I've taken kind of several books I've read to consolidate it to this. But the daily huddle is literally 5 or 10 minutes. You can't do a 20, 30 minute thing or it'll get, you'll wear them and you're out. Literally five, like stand up, 5, 10 minutes. I think we had a hard out of 10 minutes. Whoever's speaking in the middle of that sentence, 10 minutes, we're done. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Literally all we did was a core value. And it should only be the key management of the team. So for me, I'd only talk to my 2 to 5 managers. And then they might have, depending on the size of your team, they might have their core values thing, their 5 or 10 minute huddle of their team right after mine. So we didn't start at 8, right? Because we wanted to know this is on, so it'd be like 8:05. Like we're gonna start at 8:05 and then the second one would start at 8:17 or some weird time. And we expect you to be there on time. You can do it virtually. You can do it if you happen to be all together, that's ideal. If not, you can do it virtually. We did it prior to Zoom, this is back in the day. So we do it by phone, but literally all we do is a core values check. Hey Jack, core value. And he could share either a core value that he's done or a positive core value. He's someone, hey, I saw Lindsay, I saw her texting with someone, one of the clients at 6:30 her time. She's Eastern, the other guy was Pacific. And she just helps out. Lindsay loves these people. And I appreciate that about you, Lindsay. That's it. And then I would go. So we go around, everyone does a core values check. And then we do any sort of issues. And here's the magic. You do not solve the issue on the call. Just touching base. So Jack's like, you know what? I had to work with Mike yesterday and God bless it. He's usually great, but he was a pain in my ass yesterday. Drove me up the damn wall. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it. Moving on. And again, typically it wouldn't be on the management team. It'd be someone in Jack's team. Do not solve that problem. If, and this should happen once a month, Jack's like, I saw Mike steal something. Like, okay, that's a problem. We're still not going to solve it on the call, but I'm going to be like, thanks for bringing that up, Jack. Obviously we can't have any stealing. Let's do a quick offline meeting. But it's not about that, right? So if you hear something, it's not like a hard and fast net, never solve it in the meeting. That's for daggum sure. And if you do solve it, it's a separate meeting. And if you have a healthy culture, you shouldn't be having those separate meetings 0 to 2 times a month. Like it's really just most of it's just to kind of do it. I found doing that. And then you layer on top of that, like a weekly meeting, quarterly meeting. That's really all it needs. So like I said, I don't have a 0 hour solution, but we do have like a 2 to 15 hour, depending on the week solution.
No, that's about right. Yeah. Sorry, my dog.
he's got things to say. If I spoke dog, I'm sure it's all very helpful.
Yeah. Mike, it's 12 o'clock. He's telling us it's time to finish the thing.
God bless that guy. I like him. Hey, I'm hungry. Like enough of this business nonsense. I got to eat. All right. We're going to wrap this thing up. Before we do, I love asking anyone in the elite, because again, it's not a cheap program, time or money. and Jack's got a bunch of value I'm dying for him to share. What's the, if you could, you are speaking in Cleaning Nation right now, what's the one nugget you give to them as your gift?
Well, actually, I was going to reverse it, because I thought, you know what, the best thing about this course, all right, is credibility. I suddenly feel much more knowledgeable, much more confident and competent. And by the way, I'm not sure if confidence or competence, all right? I feel so much more about this industry and sector from having done literally, I mean, 6 weeks, you know, because the credibility download that you get from you, from the sharing of information across the, you know, across the calls and stuff like that is phenomenal. If there's one thing to give to anyone who's considering this, it's that it's, you know, I spent a lot of time looking at who to go to for coaching on this. A lot of time. And I like your credibility, Mike, because actually that gives you the confidence. You know that when I know now, I look, you say, it's going to be coachable, all right? I look at the other way around and go, is this guy going to coach me? So he gives me a set of things and I'm just going to get on with them. I don't need to faff around and go, do you know what? I'm not too sure if it's right or whatever. You know, I get the credibility right away. You built a 7-figure business twice round, you know? So, that's the biggest thing I take away from. And I'm not here to pump you up. You don't need any pumping up.
You're absolutely here for that. That's the only time I let anyone on my show. No, just
kidding. Yeah.
Let me translate that best I can to everyone out there, right? Because some of you are like, oh, I want to be in. Great. Go to growmycleancompany.com. There's nothing for sale, but there's all sorts of crap. Go do that. For those of you who are like, screw you. Quit trying to sell me crap. I just want value. Here's what I would translate that to. Jack nailed it on the head. I spent the first probably decade of my business being in charge and everyone looking at me for the answers and really never knowing if I was going the right direction. I'm 47, so this shows how old I am. Back in the day, there wasn't really the internet where there was like gurus or people that knew what the frick they were talking about. And if they did, they played it super close to the vest, right? It was like, they're called your competitors. They're not helping you. So I felt I had no option than I read a crap ton of books, by the way, that's a great way. If you're like, I'm not paying for expense, fine, buy a book, they're $20, buy 100 of them, that's $2,000, best investment you ever make. Obviously you gotta read them, right? If you're just using to hold down your papers, you might as well save the $20. But the long story short is, whether it's me or not, we don't care, we got plenty of clients, don't you worry about it. But you need a system and a process, ideally a coach and a mentor that you can trust. And Jack used the word credibility quite a few times, and then he translated to what I really like, which is confidence. Just knowing I've got a system and a process. If I just follow the frickin' steps, I'll get the results that I want. So when your team, your employees, your customers, your vendors, your community looks to you as the leader, because you are, you can go, I've invested in myself. And again, if it's a $20 book, fine. If it's a $20,000 coaching product, fine. Whatever, it's not the money. And here's the hint, by the way. The $20 book probably has just as good information, but it's completely on you to contextualize and figure it out. And it's just, there's no handholding, right? It's $20. The $20,000 coaching program probably has similar information, but people will walk you through it and help you and make sure you don't get off track. So I'm not here to tell you how much to spend. I am telling you, you're going to have to invest in yourself, certainly if you want people to follow you. So that confidence is magic and just makes your life better to go, even if I make a mistake, I've invested the time and money to know that I'm making good mistakes and I'm not just out there doing crazy stuff. So good news is, Cleaning Nation, the fact that you're here listening shows that you're investing in this didn't cost you any money, but it cost you time, which is far more value than money. So you're already kind of on the right track. If you want more, growmycleancompany.com. Love to serve you. Talk soon, Cleaning Nation. You're the best. See ya. Thanks for tuning in to today's show. If you're fired up, ready to grow, and want to see if you have what it takes to work with us at Grow My Cleaning Company, here's what I want you to do right now. Go to growmycleaningcompany.com/talk. That's growmycleaningcompany.com/talk to book an appointment to speak with me personally. I'm going to jump on the phone with you to get you crystal clear on where you are now, where you want to be, and how to get you there. Don't walk around in the dark any longer. If you are serious about growing your cleaning company, it's time to finally get the systems in place that you need to grow. We've helped hundreds of owners of cleaning companies not only grow their business and their personal freedom, but give back to their community as well. If that's what you're looking for, head over to growmycleaningcompany.com. mattbrown.com/talk and book a time to talk with me personally. I can't wait to get to know you and your business.